Hello, and welcome to another episode of Pat and John on Their Best Behavior. I'm John.
And I'm Pat.
And before we introduce our very special reoccurring guest, important developments in the extended Pat and John cinematic universe. As of this recording, the two of us are both microchipped.
We both
have the 5G serum flowing through our veins. Yeah.
I have been levitating for the past week.
Yeah, yeah. Pat got ahead of the curve because, I believe that Pat and I will soon be seeing each other in person. There are plans in the works, and that might mean an in-person episode. So stay tuned for that. But without further ado, let me introduce our guest. You know him from his appearance on this podcast, in which he discussed the pop punk band The Wonder Years. You may know him from his own podcast, Filmaholics Identified, in which he discusses film and interesting people and a whole host of other things. And you might know him as just a wonderful human being, which is how we know him. Please welcome to the podcast our friend, Brendan Bendorf. Hi, Brendan.
Hey, guys.
What's up, dude?
That was such a nice intro there, John. Thanks for buttering me up. I am fully vaccinated.
Hell yeah.
I had that incubation period ended for me about a week ago. So
How's that been?
Hanging.
What's it like to be on the other side?
It feels pretty much the same, except I'm not worried about...
Don't say that.
well, fair. It feels good. You know, I feel a little more comfortable in situations and being with people and stuff. So that's kind of nice. It's just nice to be able to be like, yeah, you know, ease of mind.
Yeah.
Personally, you know?
Yeah, There was a time when we had that. In fact, we had that. I won't say around this time last year because the Oscar season is happening a little later, but we had that when I appeared on your podcast, Filmaholics Identified, for what I believe was the first episode.
It was the first... Was it the first episode? Yeah, it was the first episode.
Yeah.
You were my first remote guest and also the first guest on my podcast.
Yeah, and we talked about the Oscars. Yeah. So this is a nice sort of nice coming full circle.
Yeah.
We'll get into why we have you on and what we're going to be talking about.
Tony
this
Scott.
Episode. Tony Scott. No, please. I listened to that entire episode.
Pat and I had an episode of my podcast where we dove into vulgar auteurism, and Pat gave me a rundown on what that was. Prior to that, he gave me an assignment of films to watch. We talked about Tony Scott. I read a bunch of articles, and I think he made me drink the Kool-Aid and join the cult. So
So now you can stop listening to this podcast, go over to Filmaholics Identified, and I'll see you guys next week.
But only after you've also listened to my other appearance on the podcast, in which I discuss the films of A24, which Brendan is, once again, representing with his very lovely... is that a salmon? Salmon hat?
It's a good hat.
It's pretty salmon-y.
It's such a sick color.
This is my movie hat, you know? I figure this is a good time to break it. I haven't worn it in a little bit, so...
You wear that on the course?
No, I haven't. I should. Do you golf, Pat?
You know, it's so funny you said that. It makes me so happy because I know my mother and father are listening. I told them, obviously a few wine glasses deep last year, that I said, I want to learn how to play golf. And they're like, you're not going to play golf. They just knew I wasn't going to, like, A, put forth the effort, B, stick with it. So, this can't change anything because you're in New Jersey. But, I want to play golf really badly. It just seems like a fun afternoon, have drinks, hit the,
absolutely.
I golf lefty, though. Can you teach lefty?
I'm not lefty, but my brother's a lefty, so.
Okay.
If we ever get a chance to go out, I can bring him along.
Okay.
I'll be the caddy.
Yeah, he will be the caddy. Yeah,
I'll drive the car. I'll be the caddy. I will be on Twitter the entire time. Perfect. Getting mad about something, no doubt. And I'll let you two dudes have your fun. Speaking of dudes having fun, what better emblem of dudes having fun, although less so, thankfully, than the Oscars, which we are going to be talking about. I don't know. I did my best. Not my best segue. Not my worst segue. Definitely not the worst segue that's ever happened on this podcast.
That was a good segue.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah, so we have Brendan on to talk about the Oscars, which, as of this recording, is happening in a few days. It's happening this Sunday, very, very late compared to when it normally happens, which is in early February. And yeah, we knew that Brendan is a pretty avid watcher of film, and he tends to keep up with this type of stuff. And he and I always have a blast talking about Oscars and talking about the Oscars and swapping ballots and stuff like that. So we thought he'd be great to have on the podcast to sort of give those who might not be in the know, because you're a normal person with a normal brain, to kind of give you a sense of what the landscape of the Oscars is this year. So that's where we are. That's our hopes and dreams for this podcast.
And I'm stuck here against my will, because every year I say I'm not going to care about the Oscars. Yeah. And then I watch anyways, and I'm disappointed, and I make picks, and we're here. We're here, folks. We love it.
I think there's always a lot of disappointment. Year in and year out, I think.
Yeah.
For me.
There has to be. Though I don't know. I mean, like, I don't feel the same way about the Oscars as I do about, like, the Grammys.
No.
Like, I feel like the stuff that gets represented at the Grammys is, like, by and large, like, it's not a good encapsulation of, like, the state of music. It's obviously, it's about the state of, like, mainstream music.
Yeah, pop music.
Yeah, popular music, yeah. And I feel like the Oscars is less so. Like, there's obviously more interesting stuff that is being made in the world of film, but, right, like, at the very least, like, the Oscars does a nice job of highlighting, you know, like, some interesting or good stuff that is happening in movies.
What's so strange to me about the Grammys is, like, so many awards, especially this year, are just not broadcast.
Yeah.
Like, Best Rap Album wasn't even televised.
That was weird.
This year,
yeah.
Which is, like, a lot of people care about that. Obviously, they care about it to get disappointed and to get beat up, which right, is what we're doing right now, but, like, right. Oh my God!
I don't even actually. I don't know who won Best Rap Album this year,
and that's Nas
best, the Nas album.
Really,
Best Rap Album? Yeah,
I don't even think I listened to it. Sorry, Nas.
That's okay. Illmatic came out a long time ago. That's all we need.
Yeah. Truly,
it's fair.
Yeah, though I thought the Grammys were actually, like, of the award ceremonies that I've watched this year, like, I thought the Grammys, like, did a really nice job. Compared to, especially the Golden Globes, which was like a total shit show.
Oh my God.
I haven't even done any research. I mean, we won't really talk about it for the sake of this episode, mostly because it's not what's most concerning to us, but also I just don't know a lot about it. But I'll be very interested to see how this broadcast goes with Steven Soderbergh producing it. And apparently, like, they're trying to, like, make it like a movie, like, they're trying to move, like, have it be less of a piece of television and more like a movie. I don't exactly know how that's going to work out. We'll probably know this Sunday, but
it's going to be the worst ratings of all time, right?
100%.
Like, the worst year ever. It has to be. It has to be. Like,
probably.
I mean, the ratings go down every year.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
it's worse and worse every year. And I mean, not because the show's bad, it's just because it's like, this is what we're doing. We're going to condense this thing. This is too long. This is boring.
Yeah.
But it's just, that's what it is. It's long and boring, and you just sit there and you're like, oh, cool, the person I wanted to win wins. And
yeah.
And the joke writing is just so cool. Like, because it has to be, right? It's on ABC. They can't, like, really go off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think people just care less about movies every single year because, like, other things become more.
Especially this year,
dominant.
Man. Like, with everything that's happened.
Yeah.
Like, it's, like, such a weird, it's a weird year in general. Like, all the things that you kind of thought maybe would have ended up in this list didn't even get released. Like,
right.
At least for me, like, a whole bunch of stuff didn't get released. And you're like, all right, well.
Like what?
Well, I think of The French Dispatch.
The French Dispatch, yeah.
Dune might have got, yeah, that might get like a...
Oh, yeah.
It looks great. Yeah. And that's not out yet. That comes out, what, in like a month? June?
Something like that, yeah.
So, like...
I want to say it's November. I think that's a November Star Wars release date.
Wait, are you talking about Dune or French Dispatch?
French Dispatch is November. Dune, I think, is...
I thought Dune was in November.
Maybe I'm maybe I'm mixed up. I don't know.
Here, this is information.
John will search.
I mean, stuff like Dune. I mean, I don't know if it would necessarily it's going to be great, but like it would definitely would have been a contender, like West Side Story.
Yeah.
Pat is rolling his eyes. In the Heights.
In the Heights. Yeah, I hear the Heights is probably, incredible. Yeah.
That's a musical by Lin-Manuel Miranda.
It's my favorite
In
musical.
The Heights.
I
saw the tour in Pittsburgh. It's a great, great musical.
And I'm not a musical person, but that's definitely my favorite.
Dune is supposed to come out in October.
October.
And
although French Dispatch must be coming out in June or July.
Yeah, to be fair, all of these movies are
excuse me, the new Taylor Sheridan movie starring Angelina Jolie as a forest ranger is coming out in May. We're not talking about that film. Starring our own king of Skidmore, John Bernthal. Mm-hmm. John,
I wanted to save it for the episode.
Okay.
I don't want to spoil anything. But you're absolutely right, Brendan. I mean, it has been a weird year for a million different reasons, but a lot of the stuff that, you know, would be in the conversation didn't come out, which I think is also good because we'll get to it. But like, I think that there are a lot of great movies like that got highlighted, you know, as a result of being nominated for the Oscars that otherwise probably wouldn't have. Like, there are probably four of those movies that all got in, and probably like one of them would have if like everything else had gotten in. So apart from the Oscars, let's start by just talking really broadly just for a little bit about just sort of like, and Pat and I have obviously talked about this you know, on our end of the year episode, but how do we feel about the year 2020 in film in general? And then maybe we can pivot to the Oscars and how we feel about the Oscars this year. So we'll start with you, Brendan. How do you feel about 2020?
I think it was a good year. There's a lot of things that I saw. I mean, I see everything. But there's been some like really interesting films that came out this year that I really loved. Spontaneous being one of them. I don't know if either of you saw that.
No, didn't.
I've never even heard of that.
I have a friend who was a producer on it, and it's kind of this like teeny horror thriller kind of film, but it's like a love thriller. You know what I mean?
It has the girl from Knives Out.
And 13 Reasons Why.
Ana de Armas?
No. I can't think of her name. Oh, geez. It's going to...
Yeah, sorry. Let's look it up. Don't get in touch.
I'm looking it up because it's... But basically, it's like there's this... These kids are spontaneously exploding, like, throughout this high school.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as there's you like, do. Yeah, and then there's just
no.
Like,
I'm laughing because I love that premise. I swear to God, I'm laughing because that's incredible.
And it was directed and written by the same guy who did The Babysitter, which was I love that movie.
Okay.
That's also like a weird horror. Like,
oh, the one with Vin Diesel.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. You're thinking of The Pacifier.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Get it right, John.
Yeah, but also and also from concept's point of view, and this comes directly to a Best Picture nom. I've never seen anything like Promising Young Woman. I've never seen a film like that.
Yeah.
It was so in terms of like the I guess science project that film can be and the experimentation of what it can be.
Yeah.
2020 was really good. There was a lot of interesting stuff out there. And like just strong debuts from people like Regina King's directorial debut for One Night in Miami.
Yeah.
The Five Bloods, which like, I think that
we'll talk about that for sure.
Yeah. I think that the world was crumbling and we were still given a lot of interesting stuff.
Yeah.
What
was your favorite movie of the year? Now that you've especially caught up on some of the stuff that had later releases because of the Oscars and all that kind of stuff.
My favorite, it's weird. I think that my favorite movie of the year still would probably be Judas and the Black Messiah.
Mm.
I just thought it was really well done and empowering and, the writing strong. I love to see that the Lucas brothers were so involved.
I always forget that they wrote that movie. It's so wild. It's so wild that they wrote that movie.
For me, I would say that was a wonderful watch and probably my favorite of the year.
Yeah,
it's kind of weird because I spent the entire year watching films from my couch, which I'm not used to doing. So like the whole event of walking into the movie theater is part of that experience, and that's what resonates like memories for me. So like I remember films more when I walk into a theater. The only film I saw in theaters this year was Tenet, and I was blown away by Tenet. So like,
oh, I'm so jealous.
But that was the only thing I went and saw because I have to see that in theaters.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I did because I'm sure part of the reason why, I mean, I know people have their opinions about it. Part of the reason why it's not more heavily nominated, I think, is probably because people didn't go to the theater.
Yeah. As someone who watched it on his laptop, it doesn't really translate very well.
But like seeing it in
Christopher Nolan, give this guy a wedgie. I mean, my God, put his face in the toilet.
And he would too, for many reasons. Yeah, for many reasons. Especially when he's
so here. Yeah. I don't know. It's just a weird, like I said, weird year, but still some good stuff out there. Like, and Judas and the Black Messiah takes a cake for me, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Pat and I don't really have to talk too much about it because we have an entire episode, a 3-hour long episode that you can listen to in which we talk about.
No, but I didn't get to talk about a certain movie that episode, so I will talk about that movie this one.
All right.
So I didn't get a chance to talk about that movie.
All right. If you must, go ahead.
No, no, no. You go first about what this year meant for you.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, like, I maintain, like, I hear so much.
Oh, Muddle.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Catherine Langford, by the way.
Catherine Langford. Yes. Yes. I thought it was Catherine something. Yeah. So all you Catherine Langford heads out there, don't bomb our review section. We got our name out there. Anyway, yeah, I maintain that this was a really remarkable year for movies. Like, I still, to think every, I don't know, any time, like, any, like, when the end of the year list started coming out, when, like, the Oscar nominations list came out, like, I constantly hear, like, a chorus of people who are like, this year sucked for movies, like, nothing came out, like, there were no good movies released this year. And I maintain that that's just complete and utter horseshit. Like, I think it's a really great year for more quiet movies, like really well-written, well-acted movies that like don't necessarily feature like, you know, like really well-known screenwriters or really well-known actors or really well-known directors. And yeah, those movies, like I definitely saw them like when they first came out, as opposed to at the end of the year when I kind of like catch up on all the movies that I should have seen. And like that's was a really special experience for me. And I enjoy sort of like the experience of having my finger on the pulse of those different movies just because like I needed to know what was coming out on any given week so I could watch something because I had all the time in the world to do so, obviously. And I just, yeah, I think it was a really great year for movies like in that regard. And you know, some really incredible, like you mentioned, Brendan, like first time directors, a lot of really great, like movies, like I maybe this isn't the case now that I've seen all of like the movies that got, you know, later releases because of like the Oscar season. But like there was a time when I think like of like my top 10 movies, like 7 or so of them were directed by women, which just like is not usually the case because of like, you know, the big blockbusters that come out or the types of movies that tend to get released in a given year. So, yeah. And I feel like that's kind of reflected in the Oscars, which I guess we'll get to in a second, but I'll cede the ground to Pat and he can talk about the Michael Bay movie that he wants to talk about.
John, Six Underground came out in 2019.
Oh, you're right. Sorry.
though I did watch it a couple times in 2020. Yeah, this year is tough. I think this year is really tough because of the lack of movie theaters for me. The last movie I saw in theaters was Little Women. And I haven't been back yet. I had an opportunity to go to Tenet, but I didn't really feel comfortable yet.
Yes, ladies, he did see Little Women. And yes, ladies, he is single.
Now we got that business out of the way. I was very happy. I fought watching movies this year so hard, like new movies, because I was like, this year is such a wash. I don't even want to think about, like, because I also took, we talked about this in the last episode. I took this quarantine, especially the beginning, to just immerse myself in film history. And yes, John, it was just, it was more than Tony Scott. It was large swath of film history.
I'll need some receipts, but I'll take your word for it for the sake of this episode.
And I did end up seeing, so probably every year I have one film, my favorite film that I put in the vault that's like, it's just going to be constantly back and just in my mind, in my life. To me, that movie is Sound of Metal, which I saw last week. You know, it's tough watching these at home because I was listening to a bigger movie podcast, not better. I just said bigger. and they were talking about like how important, like how different mood is when you watch something at home. Right. And I just think it just made a lot of these films such a bummer. And I think, not a bummer, but like,
kind of deflated the experience.
Yeah, I mean, I watched Nomadland. First of all, the irony of watching Nomadland on an Amazon Fire Stick is not lost on me. And I kept watching all the vistas and stuff, and I'm like, this is not the way God intended this,
right?
You know, and I go. Nowhere, and I mean, it sucks now because I don't live in this New York City anymore, but like, there's no way I can find any of these movies. I would have been able to find these movies like in a smaller city,
right?
You know, and like, it's, this is one thing that this year missed. I swear to God, I'm gonna shut the fuck up and we'll actually get this episode going. A Phantom Thread or a Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where it's pulpy and poppy, but also kind of has like real gravitas, cultural heft. Sound of Metal is my favorite movie. It is not a fun time.
Right.
That's right. Not to say that there's no levity in the movie. Yeah. There is.
Yeah.
And I think Mank, a movie that I really love, it doesn't have the kind of like fucking heft that I'm going to take Mank and the next 5 years of my life always put it on.
Yeah.
In the way that I always put on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I always put on Phantom Thread.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what I'm missing from this year. Like, you know, Sound of Metal, it's not fun. And I'm not saying that movies, I'm the last person to say movies have to be fun.
Yeah.
But it is nice in the Oscars when you have a movie that you're like, it's everything.
Yeah.
Like, it truly is everything.
Yeah, like when Mad Max Fury Road.
That is the example. Yeah. That is like the example where it's like, I can see 100 years of movie making and I can also be like, this is hilarious and guns and explosions and Tom Hardy and, you know, yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just scrolling through my Letterboxd from this year, and 2020 was fucking off the charts, actually, when I look at everything that came out.
Yeah.
Palm Springs.
American Pickle.
Let me run down this line here. American Pickle, Palm Springs, Tenet, The Devil All the Time, Greyhound was pretty good. I'm thinking of Ending Things.
Oh, yeah.
Spontaneous. Shout out Hubie Halloween. Kind of love that movie.
We love the Sandman on this podcast.
Everybody loves the Sandman. Like, dude, I'm just
the intro to Hubie Halloween, like, when he pukes on the bike.
Borat. Yeah, it's so fun. Talk, like, I mean, it's just like this so year was solid. Funny. Boy State, which obviously
I didn't see that
got
one.
Snubbed. I didn't even realize, and that came out this year. And like,
yeah,
I'm looking at documentary feature, and I'm like, oh shit, Boy State's not there, and I loved that film. So it's wild.
Yeah,
This year was good. This year's good.
So, Brendan, do you feel like that translated to the Oscars for this year? So I guess now let's talk about just our general impressions of the Oscars for this year before I move into individual categories.
Now that I think about it, there's a few things that I would have liked to see One Night in Miami in that Best Picture category. Defy Bloods. There's a couple things that I feel like, definitely got missed. In that spot. Happiest Season was really great. Like a solid Christmas movie. I wouldn't have said that should have gotten nominated. But like there's things that definitely got overlooked, unlike my brain thought. Because I don't even know how many movies I've watched this year.
Yeah.
It's like ridiculous.
But even that is like emblematic. That happens obviously every single year, things get overlooked. But yeah, I mean that's my feelings on this year. Like obviously, when the nominations first came out a couple weeks ago however long it was, there's always like people who are like, oh, like the nominees suck this year, like the Oscars suck, like they don't recognize good movies anymore. But I don't know, like for me, there's only one movie on this list that I would say I like don't think is a particularly good movie in terms of Best Picture nominees.
Okay.
There's only one that I would say is like, I did not like that movie. I don't think it should be nominated. And then like, the rest, like, are at the very least good to me. And then I would say, like, a solid half of them are really, really good.
Yeah.
And that's, like, that's kind of rare. Like, that very rarely happens. And part of that might just be because there are only 8 nominees. So, like, there's just, better chances there. Whereas, like, if you have 9 or 10 nominees, like, you're probably going to have, like, a couple that are complete clunkers. But I don't know. Like, I'm happy with that. Like, I'm happy that, like, a lot of the movies are, like, good movies and, like, there is a range there, even though, as Pat said, a lot of them aren't necessarily fun in the way that like we want a couple of the nominees to be. And even movies like One Night in Miami, which I think I agree probably should have been nominated for Best Picture. At least like got some sort of recognition in like Leslie Odom Jr. and Best Adapted Screenplay and like the music nomination. So it's cool that we obviously just do have like those that variety in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And it is one of the more diverse years too.
Yeah, that's all. That's definitely true. The diversity is,
which is so sad that it's going to have the least viewership.
Yeah.
But arguably, like the viewership doesn't matter. It's the articles that come out afterwards that really matter at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
There will be some chatter regardless. I don't think there will be any shortage.
God,
of that.
I'm going to end up watching this year, aren't I? Of course I am.
Yeah,
Of course.
You filled out a ballot.
Yeah, you filled out a ballot and everything. Yeah.
Yep.
Before we get into the individual categories, I just want to take a second to acknowledge this. So I'm really hoping to, as ever, I'm really hoping to do well on my ballot. I'm always chasing the year that I got 23 out of 24 categories correct. That happened in 2014, and it hasn't happened since. I was crunching some numbers prior to this. That was the year that Birdman...
Gravity.
No.
Oh!
Last year I got 19 out of 24. Wasn't a terrible year. Wasn't a great year. Brendan, do you remember how you did last year?
Not as well as you. Did you write it down?
I did only because...
Of course he does.
Only because I had to look through our text thread to find my ballot from last year.
Oh, that's funny.
And yours was there. I was like, I wonder how Brendan did. You did 14 out of 24.
Yeah, not great.
So that's the landscape that we're working with. So we have the scale, the scene has been set. So that's
what John's trying to say to his listeners is that he is much better at predicting the Oscars than me. Don't believe a word that this man says for the rest of your life.
Full stop, just better.
Yeah.
Just better, period.
Yeah, fair.
Just better. No, but this might be a chance at redemption on your end, because you said that you feel pretty confident about your ballot this year.
Yeah, I think it's pretty solid. I think I went into it with an open mind, and my dog's running around like a maniac upstairs. I apologize for the loud
Carson.
Noises.
Oh, is he still named Carson?
Yes, he's still named Carson.
Okay, you didn't change that?
No.
Oh, Jesus.
No, he's still named Carson. At least he's not my kid.
Yeah, fair.
For like some other
family. Dad, why is my name Jalen now?
I'm 4 years old. Why is my name Jalen now? Yeah, I'm pretty confident in my ballots this year. I think that when looking at the ballot in general and sitting down saying, all right, what do I really think is going to happen? And this was an easier year for me to take like emotion out of it.
Yeah.
Just because there wasn't one of those films that I walked into the theater and was like, wow, you know what I mean? There wasn't. Yeah. I didn't have that.
As was the case last year with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Right? Oh my
God. Yeah. I mean, me and John saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
We did. It was a very special experience.
I think it took like 5 minutes before either of us said a word. We just walked out.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I saw it. Everyone I saw it with was like, oh, that was just too long. I'm like,
And now Pat is wanted for for murder. Well, you can't say that as it pertains to movie theaters, Pat. You can't say that.
That's my God. I'm so sorry.
That's it. We had a good run.
Yeah, so the Oscars. All right, let's go. Best animated feature film. Have not seen any of the nominees.
None? You haven't seen any
of them?
I have not seen any
Pat
of them.
Pat does. Well, we've talked about this. Pat doesn't.
We've talked about animation. Yeah.
I mean, this is the closest thing to a lock. Maybe the second closest thing to a lock, but...
No, it's a lock. It's a fucking lock.
Yeah, yes, it is. You want to say what it's going to win, Brendan?
Soul. Soul was unbelievable. Yeah. Absolutely incredible film. I would make a case that it deserves a Best Picture nominee. That's how good it was.
I would say that I don't share that total assessment. I enjoyed Soul. I don't... It was, for me, not as transcendent as, like, other Pixar films have
That's
been.
Fair.
But, like, I thought it was good. I would argue, now I haven't seen this movie, but just based on like what I have seen from this movie and what I've read about this movie, I think there probably is a large group of people who believe that Wolfwalkers is probably the better movie. And there's also like always a chorus of people who are like, stop giving Pixar Oscars every single time they release a movie, which is kind of fair, but they also don't always win.
Yeah, but the Academy, the members only know Pixar. They're only going to respond to that.
I mean,
people forget that these are old people.
Yeah,
that are voting for these.
Yeah, like, less so than they used to be, which is important.
I saw some article that like to watch some nominees, you need to like have some like web service.
Yeah,
and. People don't know where to find it.
Yeah, that's why Netflix and Amazon Prime and those movies like arguably are favored in a lot of ways. Because I guess like the screener system is totally fucked up because they have to like go to some website and connect it to their TV and cast it to their TV.
Oh, I mean, listen, I know all about that stuff from my house. So.
Tim and Carrie, we love you. As ever, tell your friends to rate and review the podcast. That is a factor. But yeah, but Soul is absolutely like a lock to win. Like I think it does what it needs to do, and I think really resonates with a lot of people.
I didn't see Over the Moon or Shaun the Sheep movie or Wolfwalkers. I didn't really like follow animated too much this year.
Same, partially because I just knew once Soul came out and once I saw it, I was like, oh, this is gonna win like animated feature.
I did really love Onward though. I thought that was really well done as well. So, and it's cool. I mean, people probably hate that there's two Disney Pixar
if they release two movies in the year and one of them isn't like Cars
both,
4,
both
it's probably going to get nominated. Yeah.
They're both getting nominated. It's just they do good work, man. Like you can't deny it.
Yeah.
And the collaboration there is like unbelievable. Like the fact that people are upset about it is fair, but like the people that are there work their asses off and they've gotten there for a reason. So it's the recognition that they receive. Sure, they are this big corporate entity, but like, you know, those people have worked to get to that position, I think, too. So, like, yeah, they're the big guy, but at the same time, it's like,
well, and they're not coasting in the way that like a lot of like, I would say like a lot of the movies in the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, like I know, Pat, I don't mean to offend your sensibilities. But yeah, a lot of movies in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like a lot of them tend to feel like they're coasting, and like you'll have one of those every now and then with Pixar. But like more often than not, it feels like inventive storytelling, and it feels like special storytelling, and it's the kind of stuff that like makes you weep in a not totally cheap way.
I agree.
Where are we going next, Pat? We're not gonna be able to tackle everything. At the end, we'll go through our entire, or are we just gonna go through our entire ballot now? We didn't really talk about this.
Well, some of these are nothing, Kat. Like, original song. I've never heard of one song in the original song.
Well, I think Speak Now is going to win that, but, you know, that's just me.
That's actually... Okay, so let's talk about that. I think it's going to be either Speak Now...
I'm an asshole.
This is one of the categories that I'm kind of torn on. I think it's going to be either Speak Now or Husovic from Eurovision Song Contest. I think, like, Speak Now is going to appeal to, like, people who, like, just kind of will vote for whatever they feel, like, is the most compelling and, like, they kind of feel, like, should win. Like, it's the kind of movie that typically, or the kind of song that typically wins. But at the same time, it's also kind of, like, the exact same song as, like, three other nominees. Yeah. Like, there's a song called Fight for You. There's a song called Hear My Voice. Like, all of these kind of have, like, similar sort of vibes to them.
Sure.
Whereas Husovic is also featured in the movie, which Speak Now is as well, but it also happens at the end of the movie, whereas Husovic is featured in the movie, and I think there's, like, a group that appreciates that, and it is, like, super catchy and just is different from a lot of the others. So, yeah. I don't know. That's one of the ones that I'm going to be toying back and forth between when it comes to actually submitting my ballot.
And, but, and Pat, do you now regret bringing up original song?
I thought it was going to be like, yeah, that's stupid. Let's move on.
You're completely wrong.
Yeah, I was completely wrong.
You're talking to the wrong people.
Won't be the last time. Okay. Costume design.
I have Mank.
We're saying what's going to win, right? Not what we want to win.
Yeah.
I have Mank. I think you could probably make a strong case for Emma. I didn't see Emma, but I have Mank. I think that the costumes are strong in that. I don't really have any more elaboration to it. I think Mank.
What do you think, Pat?
I've only seen Mank out of the five nominees.
At least know what the other movies look like. You can picture
Of course. Because I love the Disney Corporation, I'm gonna say Mulan. I think Mank is gonna sweep a lot of the production categories.
I think so too.
It's just immaculately crafted, and I think it would make total sense for Fincher to win all of those awards, but still not win Best Director.
Yeah.
It would just make sense for his narrative.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, John, what's up? You're touching the chin.
I think Mank is going to come away with a single solitary award.
Hmm.
Okay.
I would bet money on the fact that it's going to come away with a single solitary award.
You think Best Cinematography?
No, Best Production Design. I think that Ma Rainey's Black Bottom is going to win costumes. I think that's like a huge aspect of the movie, especially like the titular character, like Viola Davis's character. Like she's just very well costumed and also well made up. Spoiler for another category. I feel pretty confident that that's like they like period pieces, and I think that they also do want to recognize that movie, even though they don't feel strong enough about it to recognize it in other aspects. So that's how I feel it's going to go. I think you can make a case for Mank, but I just think the Academy is very sour on Mank, even though it has the most nominations.
Even though it's about making movies.
Yeah, I think that for some reason, a lot of, I mean, this, I've heard, like, I've read stuff about, like, Academy voters talking about how they just didn't really, they respect Mank, and they recognize, like, how it's an achievement, but they also just didn't really love it. They didn't love how referential it was. They didn't really love it tonally. They thought the screenplay was clunky, hence why it didn't get a nomination for original screenplay when it's about a screenwriter. So I think more often than not, if you're choosing between Mank and something else, you should go for the something else.
So John, what you're trying to say is that I should be one of the Academy voters because I feel the same way about Mank.
Yeah, well, I was hoping we wouldn't talk about that.
But, yeah, we can get to it. I know, you know my feelings about Mank. So.
I do know your feelings about Mank, which is fair because I'll get you back with another movie that I know you really love. But yeah, so that's how I feel. I feel like it's going to be Ma Rainey's Black Bottom is going to win, maybe Emma. I would love it if Emma won because I think Emma's a better movie. I really love Emma. It's one of my favorites of the year. But I think it's going to be Ma Rainey's. So, but what do I know? I only got 23 out of 24 one year. So.
All right, John. Let's not dwell on the past.
Fair. That's fair. Where else? Where else, Pat? You're a conductor on this train to nowhere.
Jesus. How about we pick another category where I haven't seen any of the films? How about documentary feature? Haven't seen a single one of these.
Fair.
Another one that I'm kind of torn between.
I'm torn between two, but I'm pretty confident in the one that I chose, just out of complete interest. Like, I've never seen something like this. My Octopus Teacher is my choice.
And what are you torn between? That and what
Crip
else?
Crip Camp.
Oh, interesting. Which I haven't seen. I actually want to. I've heard really great things about it.
Yeah, Crip Camp is great.
Isn't Time gonna win? Isn't that the one that's gonna win?
So,
or is it too much?
I'm torn between My Octopus Teacher and Time. Mm-hmm. I actually watched My Octopus Teacher a couple days ago. And My Octopus Teacher has also won a lot of the precursor awards. Yeah. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And, like, it's not the most hefty of a lot of the nominees. It's actually arguably the least hefty of them. But, like, it's kind of a feel-good movie. It's very clear sort of what the central takeaway is from the movie. Like, the underwater, like, photography and, like, filmmaking is really incredible. And, like, you're right, Brenda. Like, it is kind of unlike anything else you've ever seen and is, like, definitely an achievement. Time is a little more, like, thematically compelling.
Yeah.
I watched the first 20 minutes of it, and I just wasn't really feeling it for some reason. Maybe I was just in, like, a weird mood, but I was also watching while I was attempting to, like, do other work, which is how I've been, like, just the past week I've been trying to catch up on stuff, and that's how I've been, like, watching most things, and maybe this isn't the type of movie that really resonates in that particular way. But, yeah, I don't know. So, anecdotally, if that's any indicator, I would say My Octopus Teacher is probably going to win, but I would say Time has the potential to. So that's... Like Best Song is one that I'm going to be going back and forth between probably up until the very end. What's your impression, Pat?
He hasn't seen any of them.
I haven't seen any of them.
Well, what are your? But you so are.
I want to see Octopus Teacher.
Yeah, it's worth it.
It's cool. It's cool.
It's an hour and a half. It's a quick watch.
Oh
yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So is Time, but Pat, it will feel like more to you. It's about the criminal justice system.
What?
Yeah,
Octopus Teacher is. It's about the criminal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's got all eight arms on the bars. Yeah, it's a really, really compelling snapshot.
Well, how about we help Patrick standing out, and why don't we go to film editing, of which I have seen four of the five.
Hell yeah, he's informed, ladies and gents. He's
informed man.
Film editing. I read a nasty article online from a disreputable website about who they thought should win film editing. And when I read that, I almost puked.
I'm so curious what this disreputable website is. Do you not want to say because you're...
I forget. But it's one of those people I go on their Twitter because I hate their film journalism.
Is it like... Are we talking... Reviews. Is it like Armand White from National Review?
No. He's a real critic. I'm talking about, like...
Yeah, I mean...
You know.
We'll talk about that some other time.
film editing. I mean, there's only one that should win, and that's Sound of Metal.
You're right.
That's the only editing that makes sense. It's the only film that's... I mean, my God.
I think you're absolutely right.
But it's not going to win, of course. I mean, John's going to explain to us why it's not going to win. But...
No, so once again, we're tackling all of the ones that I'm deciding between. I think it's going to be between Sound of Metal or... like that's the choice that makes sense. That's the... if the world were just, I think that's what would happen. But the world isn't just. This is the Oscars, the same voting body that awarded Crash Best Picture instead of Brokeback Mountain in 2005.
No, I mean, you can talk about this award. Bohemian Rhapsody won Best Editing.
Yeah, and yeah, like, God, yeah, insane. Trial of the Chicago 7 stands a pretty good chance of winning this award, I would say.
Editing?
I mean, you only made 20 minutes in, but like...
That's not true. I watched 20 more minutes yesterday.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you for your service. So it is...
It's pretty well edited.
I would say that. Yeah. I'm not crazy about the movie, but I would say... But also a lot of the entire movie experience hinges on the editing. Like the cuts between the courtroom and the flashbacks to like the riot or whatever happened in Chicago. So is it incredibly done? I don't know. It's competently done. And that's what allows the movie to exist in the form that won it a decent number of nominations and also makes it a movie that could potentially win Best Picture, though I don't think it will. Spoiler for later on in the episode. So I don't know. I think that's kind of like the typical choice because I think like a lot of people probably do have semi-fond feelings for it, and a lot of people probably do have fond feelings for Sound of Metal, but a lot of people also are probably like, what's the big deal, or didn't even see it.
Yeah.
So that's the case I would make for it, but I do think I think it makes the most sense that Sound of Metal will win. That's probably what I'm going to go with, maybe just as like I'm manifesting, you know, that something good will happen at the Oscars for once in, you know, my life.
Okay, then let's go to one category where Sound of Metal has to win.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's sound.
Yes.
It has to win.
Yeah. If you take nothing away from this podcast, listener, for your Oscar ballots, put Sound of Metal winning sound. It's in the title. It has to win. That's how it works.
Yeah.
One thing about this category that I am very happy with is that they finally fucking got rid of sound editing and sound mixing.
We both got fucked by this because...
Yeah,
because
we got opposites.
Yeah, because I think... I can't remember. See, to this day, like, I can't remember. But 1917 won sound mixing. Oh, yeah, and
God, that stupid movie.
I won't stand for that kind of slander.
1917?
We don't have to talk about it. Continue,
yeah,
we don't John.
I still maintain it's a good movie. I don't care. Yeah, it's like a video game. Okay, cool. Like, I've been on Twitter, too. And Ford v. Ferrari won sound mixing.
Yeah,
and
like
I believe both Brendan and I had those opposite. Switched. Yeah. And I was so mad because I was like, well, I'll just go for one for the, you know, one for one and the other for the other.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of them is bound to win both.
Yeah.
And it was the exact opposite. And it totally fucked my Oscar chances. So, yeah, it is great that they finally just combined this because, like, the distinction is absolutely asinine, and I'm tired of having to distinguish that in my mind when I watch a movie.
I agree, and the only thing that should win is Sound of Metal. Though,
yeah,
and it's not going to win, shout out Trent Reznor, because Soul's sound design is really good.
Didn't he also do Mank, too?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. So... Yeah.
Soul has really great sound design and also like visual effects in a way that like comes across, which is not usually the case for animated movies. So it should definitely be commended for that reason.
How about we go across the pond to international feature film, of which I've only seen one.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any of them, so I left this blank right now.
Ho, your homework. You're about to receive homework from Professor P-Stan.
Professor P-Stan, it was my number one movie of 2020 until I saw Sound of Metal in 2021. But Another Round is incredible. It is It is a movie that if it was handled by anyone born in the United States, it would be The Hangover Part 4.
Yeah.
But because Thomas Vinterberg understands things like subtlety and emotional gray areas, it's a really interesting movie. And I think the ending is spectacular. I think the morality of drinking in the movie is really interesting. Like, it is both an indictment of drinking, but also a celebration at the same time. And at different points in the film.
Like, it's this podcast.
An amazing cast. An amazing cast. And, yeah, I can't recommend that movie enough. It's going to win this, right?
I mean, yeah, and for all those reasons and more, the movie is going to win. I mean, Thomas Vinterberg also, shockingly and rightfully, got a Best Director nomination, so that gives you a sense of how much voters love this movie, because literally no one expected him to get a Best Director nomination.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's going to win. This is like Sound of Metal winning sound editing, or Best Sound, like Soul winning Best Animated Feature. Like, this is the surest thing to a lock that you can come across this year.
Looks like I'll be watching this tonight.
It's on great. Hulu. Yeah. It's you can great. Watch it now. It's so good.
It's a fun time, but also it has some heart to it. Just fair warning, as I mentioned on this podcast, in our end of the year episode, and also I mentioned before we started recording, they do feature colons where they should feature periods.
Fair,
because it's that part of the world.
Yeah,
so. Just
I didn't even notice that. Whatever you said, I didn't even notice it when speaking I watched the film. I'm just like, ugh.
Speaking of drinking, I'm going to take a moment to replenish.
Yes,
give me a.
We should talk. No. You go. We'll explain to the audience what you do.
Oh. So. Yeah.
Yeah. Brendan brews his own beer.
He does. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like how I heat my own Marie calendars.
Yes. How I plunge my coffee every morning in the French press.
Yeah. Brendan brews his own beer. And right now, I believe, is he drinking a double IPA?
It's a double IPA is on the menu today.
Which Pat doesn't like because it makes his tummy feel weird.
I really have never had a good experience with an IPA.
Have you tried recently?
No.
You're not chugging those while you're playing Breath of the Wild or Stardew Valley? What are you drinking right now? What's your?
I'm a White Claw boy.
Hell
I'm watching my diet.
Same.
So I'm assuming that John and Pat told you guys that I make meth in my basement.
Yeah. We told them that you
proceed.
Make quote unquote beer, and that your preferred type of beer to make is a double IPA. Yeah. Quote unquote.
Yes, I make beer in my house, and it is a delightful thing to make something that you actually enjoy.
You can't buy it now, but if get in touch with us and we'll get in touch with Brendan and he will pour like a bunch into like,
what's
a cardboard
the Pat and John
we'll
like
with ship it to you.
The Pat and John brew.
What would a Pat
people
and
drink
John
it,
beer?
Like, oh, it tastes like self-loathing and
it tastes like mental illness.
I feel like from our conversation earlier, it would have to be. Well, John is drinking a blueberry blonde, and Pat is drinking a White Claw, but Pat mentioned and had a question about a lager. So I think that if I were to make a beer for the Pat and John podcast, it would have to be a blueberry lager.
Mm, yeah, or just put all of those together, and it would taste just as good as this podcast sounds to our listeners. And really, at the end of the day, that's what we want a Pat and John beer to.
That's fair.
To taste like.
So why don't we?
Should we get to some of the main? Let's talk about some of the big, the big eight categories.
Can I say something about? I texted you about this, John, to remind you, but I'm gonna do it.
Yeah,
if I have a problem with Best Actor, Best Actress,
because you're not in either of those.
That's so fucking rude.
Because women are also actors, and not actresses. Is that your?
Yes, but that wasn't my issue. But thank you for bringing
that
up.
We'll go with that. For the record, that's what he was going to say. But now that we have that out of the way.
Patrick, let's hear what you were actually going to say.
Sports. the MVP of the NFL, typically on a team,
is Tom Brady.
Okay, that also pisses me off, but I'm going to let that slide because I need to finish this in a timely manner.
Is it
okay?
Man?
No. The
Brendan,
MVP.
You're thinking too hard about this.
Yeah.
Way too
the
hard.
MVP
I'm
in
just
the
giving
NFL,
Pat a hard time. That's what I like to do.
The MVP in the NFL
is Tom Brady.
On a team that wins, that has a high winning percentage. Right? They're the best player in the league.
Yeah.
But the team is also very, very good.
Okay.
What makes me so mad is when you get a best actor or best actress in a movie that is not a complete knockout.
Like the Joker?
Just because you are good in a bad movie just means you're me. When I left Skidmore and I took every independent film that would have me, okay?
Yeah,
I'm
so
tired.
Where's Pat's
I'm
tired. Oscar?
People,
where's
people
Pat's
are
Oscar?
Like, people are like, oh, you didn't see the Judy Garland movie? It's like, it was bad, but Renee Zellweger was so good. I'm like, who is Judy Garland? Is she in a little baby video? Like, who is she? I said, if the movie's not a banger, then you can't win Best Actor. We have to change that. We seriously have to change it. I'm done with this. Oh, Gary Oldman, Winston Churchill. No. No, no, no. If the movie sucks, you don't get to win.
Yeah, but The Darkest Hour didn't suck.
Yeah, but it wasn't like others.
Yeah, but it was nominated for Best Picture, so that's a bad take, Pat. I'm sorry. I'm going to call you out on that.
No. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well,
give me a better
defend
example.
Judy Garland. Garland.
Okay. No, that's
this
a good
girl in the little baby.
That's
video.
A good take. I would agree with you that is a good take.
I don't know. Even... I mean, like, but it's nominating, it's acknowledging, like, the individual. And, like, the individual doesn't really have a lot of control over what the movie ends up being like. I mean, yeah, I guess if the movie sucks because it's a bad script, that's one thing. But usually that's not the reason why it sucks. Like, there are a bad direction. There's bad other things that are involved.
I see both sides of the picture here. I think Miles Teller was really good in War Dogs, okay? So.
Well, that's a take we can get
I do like War Dogs. You can stay. I do like War Dogs a lot.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just don't think. Cause
it's
like,
just something that I think about. It's just something that I think about.
Sometimes that can stop a movie from being a complete and utter, like, unmitigated disaster. Like, a good performance can take it from being, like, a movie that's just like, it should have been better. It can take it to that
like
from
the Joker.
Being, like, total and utter dog shit. Yeah, I would say that's a good example. Yeah, I would say that's a great example.
But the Joker can be an example for both arguments.
Unfortunately, yeah.
The Joker can be an example for a lot of arguments.
Yes, and we don't... I've ranted about the Joker enough in the past year and a half, so...
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm just saying, like,
I know where you're coming from, Pat, and John. I know where you're coming from as well. I hear
I
both
do
of
as
you.
Well, I don't necessarily care. I just wouldn't like. I wouldn't necessarily paint it with a super declarative broad brush.
Fair.
Because it's also cool when like
this guy's never been on a podcast before. I mean, my God.
Yeah, I'm not in the business of doing that. Very fine people on both sides. What can I say? No, I mean, like, because, you know, there are some cases where people win, like, I don't know, who should have won for other things, and we give it to them. Like, you can make an argument for Glenn Close deserving that for this year. I wouldn't, because Hillbilly Elegy is evil in every sense of the word. But, like, there are cases to be made for her being nominated for this movie just because she gives a fine performance, which I also think is true, but... You know, and stops the movie from being as bad as Amy Adams and whatever that annoying guy who played both old and young J.D. Vance's name.
Patrick Stanny.
Patrick Stanny, yeah. Yeah, venture capitalist extraordinaire. Okay, well, so all of this is to
I'm
say
sorry.
What, Pat? Best actress. Best actress is the most interesting category of this year. And I will lay out why that is the case. for the first time in many, many years, in a major category, we have someone, a different person has won every major precursor award. So Andra Day won the Golden Globe.
Oh my God.
Carey Mulligan and Andra Day won Critics' Choice Award. Viola Davis won SAG, and Frances McDormand won BAFTA. So anyone who goes into this saying, oh, it's clearly going to be this person, is totally, as we do on this podcast, talking out of their ass.
Yeah.
Because there's no way to say what's going to happen.
Viola Davis will win.
I think that's a fair assumption.
Make your case. Convince me.
They're familiar with her. They're yeah. also familiar with Frances McDormand, but I don't think that they will get Nomadland in the way that they'll get Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
So,
I've pretty much chosen Andra Day to win this, basing it off of the Golden Globes. I haven't gotten a chance to watch The United States vs. Billie Holiday yet, but I hear she's fantastic. I've talked to bunch of people about it, but my other choice would be Carey Mulligan. Promising Young Woman was great. She's fantastic. I think the dark humor in that film is hard to necessarily dissect.
Yeah. But
I, as a fan of that type of thing, got it immediately, and yeah. like just I thought her performance was fantastic from the jump.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people. I mean, I would include myself in this, who feel like Carey Mulligan should have an Oscar by now anyway. So, like, when you couple that with a really incredible performance, regardless of how you feel about the movie in general, like, it makes sense that she would win. And I think that's a very high possibility. Yeah. I would say right now I am torn between Viola Davis, Carey Mulligan, and Andra Day. I think right now I'm leaning toward Andra Day. I think that Viola Davis, she's won fairly recently, though not in this category. She won for Best Supporting Actress in 2015 or 2016 for Fences. And you could say, like, okay, she's in another August Wilson play, and, you know, that's a recipe for her winning again, but also, like, people aren't really that warm on that movie in general. It didn't get nominated for Best Picture. It didn't get nominated for any Best Supporting Actor stuff. You know, it didn't get nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay. And she's, like, a big part of the movie. She's also not in the movie very, very much. Mm-hmm. Like, she's arguably Best Supporting Actress. This is kind of a case of, category fraud to some degree. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I necessarily see a lot of warmth for her performance. Also, it's incredibly rare. I don't know what the stats are in this, but it's incredibly rare for there to be, like, a match between Best Actor and Best Actress. I don't know when the last time it happened was, but it's been a while. So if Chadwick Boseman is going to win for Ma Rainey, which he probably will, I don't know if I necessarily see him bringing Viola Davis along for the ride. With Carey Mulligan, I think people are really warm to that movie, hence why it overperformed in a lot of aspects, like Emerald Fennell getting nominated for Best Director, and she's probably going to win for Best Original Screenplay. But I don't know, like, the Academy is still, even though it's getting more diverse, is still very old, and I think that Andra Day is, like, emblematic of that, you know, the kind of role that would win in a lot of years past. Like, she's playing a real life figure, a really well known figure, a figure that undergoes a lot of, like, personal turmoil. The movie is terrible. Lee Daniels, like, produces another clunker, but but a lot of people anecdotally have said they don't like the movie, but Andra Day is incredible in it. And she also does her own singing, which people notice and people appreciate. And people like that narrative of, like, a singer turned actor kind of situation. So I don't know. As of right now, I'm leaning towards Andra Day, but I can see a case being made for Viola Davis or Carey Mulligan as well. I mean, Viola Davis won at SAG, and there is a lot of overlap between SAG voters, people who vote for SAG, and people who vote for Best Actress, but there also isn't necessarily a one-to-one. So, I don't know. I'm not helpful in any regard in this aspect, but if you like the sound of my voice, you got to hear that for the last 10 minutes.
I do like the sound of your voice. It's nice.
Oh, thank you, Brendan. Appreciate that.
Of course.
I'm saying Viola Davis. I'm saying put it all, bet the farm on her.
It could happen.
I'm serious.
I wouldn't bet the farm, but it could happen. She would only be the second black Best Actress winner. Fun fact.
So
if she won.
Therefore, Andra Day would also.
Yes, that's true. Yes, yes. By the transitive property, that is how that works.
but not Carrie Mulligan. Just so
Carrie Mulligan, yeah, Carrie Mulligan is not black. But let's get that very clear on this podcast. If there is some aspect of your Oscar ballot that is asking if Carrie Mulligan is black, say that she's not.
She's not.
She's British?
She's British. British.
No, she's not.
That's what have it you says never on the seen internet. Her in anything else? Have you never heard her talk?
I guess not. No.
Yeah, she's very British. She's notoriously British. Sorry, Carrie Mulligan.
Okay, let's go to an award that's going to make me mad.
Okay. Let's make you mad.
Best cinematography.
Oh.
Wait, no, this is not a big award for John, but it's a big award for half of this podcast.
Okay.
It's a big award for me, too, I'd say.
Two-thirds,
yeah.
Two-thirds of this specific episode.
Yeah.
I think... who's going to win? Who's going to win? I think Judas and the Black Messiah is going to win. But I don't know if the Academy likes the gooey cinema verite of Nomadland. And I would like Mank to win because I met Eric Messerschmidt on set when I worked on Mindhunter, and he was really nice. He was one of the nicest people on the set.
It wasn't David Fincher?
You worked on Mindhunter?
Thank you. Yeah.
We can talk about that later.
We'll talk about it later.
Yeah. Pat, I have Mank winning cinematography.
Okay. Well, I was going to say that originally, but John scared me from it.
No, that's fair.
When he said that John, Mank is only going to win best production design.
John has strong opinions, but he has only gotten 23 out of 24 once.
You know what?
And that'll be the 23rd one.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think that Mank is going to win, and the reason why I think Mank is going to win is because of all of my problems with Mank. The cinematography in that film is, for lack of a better term, incredible.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It is sublime. The use of
the black and white in terms of cinematography and how you have to recolor correct that from what they're working off of and the choices that they had to make for that film and the interesting angles and everything work very well for Mank. And there's a lot that goes into that. So I think that just from the production standpoint of how much work that had to go into that cinematography, it's going to win. Nomadland would be a strong case, but no offense, it's not as difficult to find good sunsets as it is to color correct and do all the things that you need to do for the camera for a film like Mank. Personally, that might be a weird take, but that's what I think.
No, I don't think that's a weird take. I think it's hard because I think in any given year you can see evidence for either one of those, like either like the most skillful things or just the ones that just like that just hit you like as a viewer, which Nomadland really, does. It's a big part of
the movie.
It's
really hard though to hit some of those moments in Nomadland as a cinematographer.
Yeah.
Like it's really hard to actually get.
Oh yeah, that's totally fair. I'm not taking away from that.
I think it's a question of intimacy, which is Nomadland, like putting the camera in the van, getting people's reactions, stuffing the camera in the which my favorite part is when she's working in the Badlands and she's at working in the fast food restaurant. I love that.
Can I just say also, if you did happen to see this movie in a theater, it
would have been
it's not just, and I know that you were kind of saying this just for rhetorical purposes, Brendan, but it's not just Sunsets.
Yeah.
Like, it is a transcendent experience. Yeah, and I don't know how many did see it in theaters, but I'd be willing to bet that some people found their way out because they probably just knew that it would be something you need to experience in theaters. And Mank, you could not experience in theaters at all.
Yeah. I personally probably would have liked, I think I would have liked Nomadland more if I saw it in a theater.
Yeah,
I think so.
We can get to that when we get to our best picture.
Yeah, now, I actually have to use the bathroom, and while I'm doing that, I'm going to allow the two of you to have some sort of discussion about me and what I do, or something along those lines. Which Pat can feel free to cut out of the podcast, but and then when Pat has to step up for some reason, we can do the same for him. But I'll be right back.
It's because I have the bladder of a grown man; I can hold it. I actually want to keep talking about Mank versus Nomadland cinematography.
Yeah.
I don't actually want to shit on John. I want to keep this discussion.
I don't
want to
shit
on
John
interesting.
Either.
The cinematography in Mank is like very classical. Yeah. Like, it's an old movie.
Right.
The dolly shots,
right.
Like the blocking, the staging, it is old school, and yeah. It is like, you know, and
I think it's a return to the roots of Hollywood, you know.
Oh, totally.
That's hard to do these days. Like, it's just the way that they did things back then to actually, like, put all of that back into a film. And I wasn't a huge fan of Mank, but, like, for that
sure.
was...
Well, what are the parts about it that you don't like? Like, I'm curious, like, what...
I thought the script was a little off. I thought that... I thought it was... And the funny thing is, like, now that I think about it, I came out of that watch... And I thought it was pretty unmemorable. But because of that, I remember it. It's one of those, like, weird... Like, I think about it all the time now.
Sure.
So maybe I need to give it another go, but I just don't... I don't know. I just felt like there was something too stylistic about it, maybe. It was too kind of in your face. Maybe it was a little too much... Of like, this is what we want this thing to be, and you know, maybe I don't know. I just think that I didn't love it because I thought it was, for the most part, not memorable, and that's why I really wasn't a huge fan of Mank.
I think a problem with the movie is that it becomes too many different movies by the end.
Yeah.
But I see what you mean. I'm a big fan of like the verbal sparring of the script. Like, I liked it when he was just at the dinner parties, just like
that's one scene I did like.
And just I thought, going off, at
and
people.
I thought that the first conversation, his first scene with. Amanda Seyfried when they're out in the courtyard was really strong.
Yes.
Also,
yes.
But those are the only two moments of the film that I actually enjoyed. Personally, I just thought it was a little over. I don't know. I think I would have liked it. Maybe I think I would have liked it more if it was less about the style and more about.
That's what Fincher is interested in, though.
Yeah, but it just didn't feel like a. I was excited for that.
It's also a very different Fincher film.
Yeah,
to be fair.
So yeah. I loved it. Fincher. Like, but I don't know. I was thrown off by it. You know, maybe that's it. Maybe I need to rewatch it. Maybe I need to watch a lot of these things, but I have my opinions.
That's just your opinion, man.
That's just your opinion, man.
I will say...
That's one of my favorite films.
Yeah?
Yeah. The Big Lebowski, right. Pat?
Of course. Of course. At least I'm housebroken.
The rug peers didn't do this, man.
We can't devolve into a podcast with three dudes quoting The Big Lebowski.
Yeah,
I have my standards... and I'm asserting them now.
Okay.
That is what I say, though, when people come to my apartment and I go, does it look like I'm fucking married? Like, you know.
It's fair.
Let's do, well, speaking of Mankey Mankey, let's do Best Actor. It's not going to be him.
No. Yeah, among the most boring categories.
Chadwick Boseman's going to win.
Yeah, it's gonna it's gonna be Chadwick Boseman.
It's
there are slight rumblings, especially after Anthony Hopkins won at BAFTA, about the potential.
If he fucking wins. Like, that's just
enough.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are slight rumblings about enough people being like, oh, I think that Chadwick Boseman is going to win, but I also really love Anthony Hopkins, so I'm gonna vote for him because, like, I mean. Most people, like, you would think that Anthony Hopkins has won since Silence of the Lambs, but he hasn't.
Yeah,
and
but Chadwick Boseman hasn't won.
Right, for sure. And that's, like, there's obviously a huge, like, case to be made there. But I would be surprised if Anthony Hopkins did, or Chadwick Boseman didn't win. Yeah. But I would not be incredibly surprised if Anthony Hopkins did end up winning. Chadwick Boseman is what I'm going to put down as on my ballot. Yeah. But I will say that Anthony Hopkins' performance is remarkable and is heartbreaking and is haunting. I have not stopped thinking about that movie, or I should say, not a day has gone by since I saw that movie that I've not thought about it. And it is remarkable and haunting and, you know, all of those things. And it's a really incredible Anthony Hopkins performance. So I don't know. I would be okay if he won. I would also obviously be okay if Riz Ahmed won, you know, for Sound of Metal, but he's going to be nominated for many things throughout his career.
I think that the entire category is really strong.
I would agree.
Yeah. I haven't seen The Father yet. Heard it's good. Haven't seen it yet. Plan on watching it before Sunday.
Yeah.
But Steven Yeun was great. Riz Ahmed's great. I think the entire category is solid, and everybody,
I would agree,
everybody deserves to be there.
Yes, yeah, and that's pretty rare. That's pretty rare, like, especially with major categories,
guys,
like,
I mean, it's so, I mean, Riz Ahmed should win. It's the best. I mean, it's absolutely transcendent. Come on,
I would agree.
Come on, it's different. It's different. He's built different.
I like that.
I don't
type
disagree.
Of I like disagree. That type of performance more than Chadwick Boseman's performance in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Like, yes. It's a movie that, I mean, I also just like Sound of Metal infinitely more than Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. So I don't know. I mean, like, are they, but Chadwick Boseman does leave it all, like, on the floor, like, in that movie. And it is, like, a pretty towering final performance. So it's hard to argue against him winning. Pat, if you would like to make that argument, I see the ground to you.
For what?
For Chadwick Boseman not winning that category.
I'm not going to say that he doesn't deserve to
right,
win.
That's, yeah, that's my, yeah, right, that's the point. It's a joke. It's a joke. It's a joke.
I took that so sensitive.
To be fair, and we can. I think this would be a good segue. We could. I would say that Chadwick Boseman could have been nominated for actor in a supporting role for Defy Bloods and would have probably won that if Daniel Kaluuya wasn't so fucking good in Judas and the Black Messiah.
Yeah, I agree with the first part of that. I think I expected him to be nominated at the very least. And I was actually kind of bummed about that because, like, I do think he's great in that movie, but this is another category where I think, like, so many of the nominees are so great.
That's what I mean. It's like, it's a year that there's, like, there's no way that he would have won that.
Like, yeah, and yeah, for sure. And I just don't think that, even though people have understandably and justifiably fond feelings toward Chadwick Boseman, I don't think that it would have been enough to carry him to win, like, two posthumous awards. But yeah, I mean, he is a really important aspect of that movie and arguably is, like, the heart and soul of that movie. But yeah, Best Supporting Actor is also a complete lock. Daniel Kaluuya is winning it. He's won everything at this point.
Yeah.
And there's no hope for anyone else, even though Paul Raci is remarkable.
No, he's fantastic.
And I would say, I don't know if I should. I don't know if I would say that he should win a part instead of Daniel Kaluuya. I mean, like, that performance is incredible, and Daniel Kaluuya is one of our, you know, one of our best. I would say
he'll have more. He'll have more. He'll have plenty, plenty more.
Yeah, that's true. Though I could see a world in which he doesn't have anything that's as good as this.
It's hard to argue against when it comes to, especially for actor nominations. It's really hard to bet against anything that is not from either notable fiction or a powerful figure. It's like the
who is known for his like
right like Fred Hampton is known for this. You think of Joaquin Phoenix and the Joker. Like, the Joker is a well-known character. Like, when someone does something that is well-known in the world and gives a good performance along those lines, those people are almost always a lock. It just happens like that.
It's true.
Because people can connect to that because they know the stories before they see the film.
Yeah. And but then also the performance, you know,
justifies
illuminates it. Something new about the story as well, or about the figure as well. Yeah, that's absolutely true. But like Paul Racy,
he was unbelievable. He was unbelievable.
He is a part of some of the most like compelling moments in film.
He'll probably win the Spirit Award for it.
Yeah, yeah. Which, you know, which will be awesome because he really was like, I think he's in his 70s and he was like totally unknown. Like, he was just a Chicago actor that like people knew in that scene, but like somehow stumbled his way into this movie. And again, like, this is a testament to how special this year is, because I think in any other year, Paul Racy would not have been in the conversation.
Yeah.
And this just random older guy in Chicago got plucked from there and now is like one of the most talked about performances of the year, which is really special. We're running low on time, but let's talk about the screenplay categories. I think those two are interesting to me. So then like we'll move to best picture. What do you guys have for original screenplay?
Promising Young Woman, just the most, I thought it was the most interesting. I've never seen anything like that. It's just captivating and brilliant and a truly original. And Sound of a Metal also.
Yeah.
Being truly original. But I just thought Promising Young Woman was this truly, truly, truly original take on like a pop. Like, it's like a pop romance thriller. You know what I mean?
Yeah, conceptually there's like a lot going on there that I think would make a lot of voters like drawn to
so
it.
That's what I would think would win, just because of that. I think the screenplay's really solid.
Yeah, I think that it's also going to win. I think that I do think, just because it's what he's known for, I think Trial of the Chicago 7 stands a decent middling chance of taking it, because I'm still looking for that place that people are going to award Trial of Chicago 7, and it feels weird that it's going to pull an Irishman and like come away with zero wins at all. But that could be the case. I think that there's a possibility for it getting something there, but I think Promising a Woman is a safe bet, with Sound of Metal being the most airtight best screenplay in that category, in my opinion. Pat, what do you think?
Should obviously be Sound of Metal. It's the only screenplay here that has people actually speaking real words. Like, real cognitive, lived-in language. You know?
Yeah, I mean, stylistically, it's very much in a world of its own. Yeah. I would say is the same.
You buy
the same world.
Everything everyone says in Sound of Metal.
Yeah.
And doesn't and does not express through spoken word either.
Yeah.
You know?
And like just plot wise, like the different beats of the script and the plot. Yeah.
Let's be real here
with that.
That movie, Sound of Metal, there is a parallel universe in which it's awful.
Oh, yeah.
In which he relapses hard. in which, like, the girlfriend is, like, a nothing character and has no sort of, like, depth to her. Yeah. And in there's a universe in which, like, it's all about the music that they make. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. There's a world in which it's, like, it's a fusion of that movie, Music, that came out this year, and, like, Requiem for a Dream.
Yes,
like a fusion
of the two of those
in a really terrible mixture.
And I think the way the movie deals with the Riz Ahmed's race, in the fact that, like, it's never discussed.
Yeah.
In the fact that, like, and there's a whole discussion to have about being a non-white person in heavy metal.
Yeah.
And they choose, like, I think very smartly so, to just be like, this is him.
Yeah.
This is who he is.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I don't know. I just, it should just bowled me over.
Yeah.
To be fair, there are some non-white people in heavy metal, Pat.
Have you ever heard of the little band named
System of a Down?
of course.
We don't have time to get Pat anyway about System of a Down.
No. What I mean, but it's like, yeah, it is historically a very, very white genre.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, almost belligerently white.
Yeah.
One might say white and proud genre.
Yes.
To some degree. But yeah, but there is an aspect of that that is, yeah, not explored potentially to the movie's credit. But it's not going to win, Pat. Sorry. Best adapted screenplay.
I have Nomadland for this. I thought that the dialogue's beautiful in that film.
Yeah.
Especially all of the, like, all the conversations with the nomads, the real nomads that Chloe Zhao brought into it. And
see you down the road.
Oh boy. Oh. I had to use that one last night.
Yeah. Oh. I think it's going to win.
Hmm.
I don't know. This is another one that I am really torn between. I think it's probably going to be Nomadland, because if it does win Best Picture, which I think Nomadland is going to, like, I think it's just going to, I think the Best Picture win will bring the Best Adapted Screenplay win along with it, because I think people will just see, like, oh yeah, like, this is based on an adapted screenplay and I love this movie, and, like, surely this wasn't easy to translate, so they're just going to go along with it. But I don't know. The Father also is a really great movie. The choices they make that are very obvious when you're watching it, like, in terms of adapting it from a play to a movie, which is not easy to do and doesn't always result in the most transformative filmmaking experience or cinema going experience, as is evidenced by Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. I think people will notice that, and I think there is a large group of people that really respect what The Father does, and what I can't remember his name, Florian Zeller, I think is his name, but the director who adapted his own play. I think there will be people who respond to that really positively. So I'm going back and forth. I think the safe choice is Nomadland, but if you're going for 24 out of 24, or now 23 out of 23, and you want to make, you know, you want to win those by making bold choices, The Father might be a more adventurous bet, but I'll probably go with Nomadland because I'm a coward. And also, a lot of times, Best Picture winners, it does correlate to some sort of screenplay win, as we saw last year with Parasite and the year before with Green Book, somehow winning Best Original Screenplay over The Favorite and Roma. It's usually required to some degree.
We don't need to talk about Green Book,
John. We don't need to talk about Green Book.
We can forget about your Green Book.
We'd all be better off if we did.
Yeah.
Best director, Chloe Zhao is going to win. That's all there is to it.
That's fair. I have Isaac Chung, but...
Oh, I mean, I am begging you, Brendan. I'm as my friend, change
Don't
it to it. Chloe Zhao.
Don't
she,
change
she's
it
won...
to Thomas Vinterberg. You know.
Change it to, what's his fucking face? Todd Haynes. No, Todd Phillips.
Oh, Todd Phillips
Joker.
For the Joker?
Yeah, change it to Todd Phillips for Joker. No, Chloe Zhao is winning Best Director. Yeah, Best Director. It's happening. She's won everything else. That is probably the actually, apart from sound, is the closest thing to a lock.
Yeah, you're probably right.
She's gonna win Best Director.
I pretty much know you're right.
Everything else that I've said, like, I could be totally off, as is evidenced by the fact that I have had some really bad categories. 17 out of 24, I think, happened in 2018 for me. Still not 14 out of 24, all right, but pretty bad. but yeah, Chloe Zhao is going to win this. She will be the second woman to win Best Director, and the first woman of color to win Best Director, which is really cool. Yeah,
you know, John, about that. I'm sorry that I'm not as aligned in Oscars knowing as you are, and by association, I'm not as close to the mindset of an old man as you. So
yeah, that's clearly true. But you're much more aligned and much closer to the world of brewing than I am. And at the end of the day, that's truly what matters more in the world.
Maybe
truly what matters.
Maybe so. All right, I guess we have one more category
to go
over, and that would be Best Picture. I can guess what Pat's Best Picture choices.
Well, based on what he wants or what he thinks is going to happen.
What he wants.
Okay.
Pat wants Sound of Metal to win Best Picture. Am I correct? He's nodding his head.
I also want that to happen.
John also
to be fair.
Wants Sound of Metal to win.
It's not going to win. It's not going to win. It's going to be Nomadland.
No,
wait,
Brendan
no.
Said,
I think it's gonna be. That... I think it's gonna be Judas and the Black Messiah.
Yeah, I'm so curious about this. Make your case.
Oh God.
I think the strong empowerment. I think that there's just through the year that we've had. I think that there's with George Floyd, with Defund the Police, with all this stuff, the Black Panther Party, and all this information about that that's happened in the past year. I think that's going to win. And I would like it to win. I loved Judas and the Black Messiah. I think that it's a remarkable film. I think that everything else on this list is pretty solid. But in a year that was particularly difficult in seeing films in the theater, the one thing that really stood out to me by sitting on my couch was Judas and the Black Messiah. I felt like I could, you know what I mean? Like I just felt like it just really,
you know, it's resonated. So interesting.
That's my feeling.
So, but do you think that do you think that it will translate over to Academy voters?
Not necessarily.
Okay. So
yeah, all the stuff that you were talking about, I'm like, for most of the Academy voters,
yeah, no, totally.
It's the opposite.
This is the glimmers of hope that I have in the world.
So once again, you are.
I am. I'm fighting with my heart, I guess.
You're once upon a time in Hollywood in the Oscars.
Yeah.
I would. Yeah. I've talked to John about Nomadland and my true feelings about Nomadland.
Which I will say are a lot better. Not better, but a lot more justified than a lot of the other reasons that people have for not loving Nomadland.
And I will dive into this. Personally, and I've thought a lot about this film, I think it's a good movie. But there's a but. I don't know why I have a little bit of a beef with Frances McDormand. It's not her fault. It's really not her fault. But just the fact that she was involved with this thing from the jump. This was her film. She produced it. She's like, oh, I want Chloe Zhao to make this movie because she's going to make it feel real. And then she casts herself as the leading role. Pissed me off. Because it's a film that...
One of the only two like actual acting roles. Like or roles that feature actual actors.
I wanted so badly... And I would have loved it a lot more if she was one of the nomads instead, and they cast a nomad in her role. One of the real people.
Yeah.
That's my only, that's literally my only issue with the film. And it's drugged me down this dark place where at the end of the day.
The movie never would have been made, though.
I know.
With the, you know.
And I understand that. But
that's, yeah, of course, yeah.
But because, you know, because of Frances McDormand, who she is, I feel like she could have fought for that story to happen. And I feel like it's a little bit like she's had, she's gotten, you know, she's had these accolades before.
I agree with you in the sense that, like, that would have been cool, but it would have been a movie that would have gone the way of The Rider, which is a movie that...
Yeah, it would have been...
Which, admittedly, Brendan, you haven't seen The Rider,
no,
right?
No, I haven't seen it, no.
Right, so, like, and that's not me being, like, tut-tut on Brendan, but it's, like, that's a testament to, like, how that movie is just not discussed past a certain sphere, you know? So it would have been, for sure, like, for Chloe Zhao, would have been a great, like, movie, just as The Rider was, but wouldn't have resulted in her, you know, sort of penetrating this beyond this bubble that, you know, she was in before making this movie. And most importantly, it wouldn't have gotten her the clout to be able to direct a Marvel movie.
You know what's so funny? Her husband has shot all of her films. I think he's a pretty talented cinematographer.
Yeah.
He's not shooting the Marvel movie.
You don't say. They're not taking a chance on him. they don't want those beautiful Wyoming sunsets in Eternals.
Turns out they don't.
Weird.
Turns out they don't.
Weird.
Judas and the Black Messiah. Here's my beef with the movie. Here's what I like. There's no exposition. It's really well directed.
Yeah.
It just goes.
Yeah. A huge snub for direction, arguably.
I would think. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Totally. So confidently directed. So confidently directed. Two, they don't need the FBI, like the scenes between Landry and who plays J. Edgar in the movie. Whoever he plays J. Edgar. Doesn't matter. Don't need
Martin Sheen. Sheen.
Yeah, they don't need that.
And that awful makeup.
Don't need it. The movie is also totally ambivalent about Lakeith Stanfield. And I needed more from what the assignment was doing to him. I really did.
I've heard that take. I don't agree with that take. I think that's the entire point of the character.
Yeah.
Is that he is he's just a cipher. Like, he just is, he does not have a personality. That's like the character in real life as well. Like, you watch like interviews of him, he's just like, I don't know, like, they gave me money and that's what I had to do. Like, that's what you have to be in order to be that person, in order to, like, sell out the leader of the Black Panthers, like, one of the most exciting, like, hopeful forces in American politics within the past 100 years. And I think Lakeith Stanfield is the perfect person to do that, just because of his sort of, like, squirrely persona. I just that is one of the takes of 2020 that I just hate so much, is the, like, he doesn't have a personality. Like,
he doesn't have a personality. It's just like, I don't know.
He's walking on eggshells the entire film. And
I don't even like film criticism where people are like, oh, I don't like that character.
Yeah, right.
But I just, there was just something really lacking there. There's just something really lacking there, I love Lakeith Stanfield.
I know, like, you and I are, like, probably the biggest Atlanta heads in the universe. Donald Glover, please come on the podcast.
I was just watching the episode where he's making pasta and he's like, "Oh, I'm gonna put my foot in this," and he actually puts his foot in the pasta that he's making.
It's cinema. It's cinema.
I don't know, guys. I maybe I just need to rewatch this movie and pay attention to him. okay, here's another issue. You just don't give a shit about him. You're all on Daniel Kaluuya.
Yeah, which I think is, I mean, like, it's Daniel Kaluuya who, Lakeith Stanfield is great, but Daniel Kaluuya is, again, one of our best. And the character is one of the most interesting, compelling, important figures in, you know, American history of the past 100 years. So I think it is kind of, but that movie also does, there is a case to be made for the fact, and this is evidenced by the fact that both of them got nominated for Best Supporting Actor when one of them has to be the fucking lead. That's how these things work. Like, Judas and the Black Messiah can't be the supporting characters. So there is something to be said there. And I do see some of the criticism about how there is some, you know, there's some lane choosing that needs to happen there for sure.
Yeah. I definitely thought that Lakeith Stanfield was the lead in this film. I have an opposite opinion.
Yeah,
I thought that
I agree.
He had a lot of that character had a lot of was the driving focal point of it. And I understand the take of, like, you don't need the FBI, you don't need this, you don't need that, but that is the story that was being told. You know what I mean?
And I think the scene between Landry and Lakeith Stanfield where, like, there's, you know, he invites him to his home. Like, I think that is, like, emblematic of how these things actually do tend to pan out. Yeah. I saw some, like, leftist criticism, which even as a leftist, I can say is the most annoying type of criticism, where they're like, oh, like, why do they humanize the FBI so much? Where it's like, that's probably how it happens.
Yeah.
Like, they probably were people who were like, no, we think this is what's happening for the best. And, like, that's I think true to reality. So
at the end of the day, some people are just, like, doing their job, and like, as much as you disagree with
their job is awful. Like, the FBI is awful and the CIA are awful. Like, all these things are absolutely true, but, like, there's some level of, you know, real conviction. You don't need to have, like, some sort of, like, you know, ominous, evil sounding music underneath like the score to signal that this is the bad guy.
Yeah.
And I think, again, that's a testament to the direction and the screenplay, is that like, all of this feels very, you know, well realized. So, but Pat, what do you think is going to win Best Picture? We should just lean into this. This is a 2-hour episode. I mean, this is the 2-hour episode. This is the 2-hour episode.
I think Judas and the Black Messiah is too caustic. It's too antagonistic. It's too active of a film.
Yeah, by which you mean, and I'm saying, like, for Academy voters, there are black people in this movie.
Right.
Like, it's still Moonlight notwithstanding, but that's a, you know, they had their moment, essentially. That's what I think what a lot of Academy voters will probably say.
I don't think Promising Young Woman's going to win.
I agree with that.
I don't think it's going to win.
I don't think so either, but I would actually be pumped.
Mank is not going to win. I don't know. Is Nomadland going to win?
Mank is going to be the bottom. The bottom. For sure.
I have to pick one, don't I?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how this works.
Sound of Metal will win.
You actually think so?
Speak it into existence.
Yeah. Manifest that shit.
Manifest it.
If Chloe Zhao wins Best Director, which I guess she will, then Nomadland's going to win Best Picture.
I don't know. That doesn't always happen. That's not a foregone conclusion. There have been a lot of splits.
Yeah.
A lot of splits.
For example, when Ben Affleck did not get nominated for Best Director and Argo won Best Picture.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And when Alfonso Cuarón won for Roma and Green Book won for Best Picture and Peter Farrelly wasn't even nominated. So
Ang Lee won Best Director for
Brokeback Mountain or Life of Pi.
Life of Pi, that's what
he's won twice for Best Director, and his movie has never gone on to win Best Picture. Yeah, that can happen. So I think that Nomadland is going to win, but I don't think it's necessarily going to be because Chloe Zhao wins Best Director. But what are you actually, as of right now, these are subject to change, what are you putting on your ballot?
I just had a crazy vision. Of Chicago 7. A crazy vision. That doesn't sound crazy. The father to me seems crazy.
The father is crazy, I think.
Even crazy. Mank seems crazy.
That's unheard of. That's impossible. But I don't know.
I have this vision of Chicago 7.
Okay, well then that's going to ease into me. I mean, I think Nomadland is probably going to win. It's won everything it needs to win. It won at the Globes. It won at BAFTA. It has won at even smaller things. Like, it's just won little smatterings here and there, and like has won everything it needs to win. A Nomadland just clean sweep is not outside the realm of possibility. They happen. It's less and less, common these days. But I think it's probably going to win. And the thing that makes it less of a lock than it could be is the fact that the Oscars uses a preferential ballot, which, for those of you who might not know what that means, essentially, like, people rank their choices. And the way that it works, if, like, I think 50% plus one or whatever gets like the all number one votes, like on the first round, then that's the winner, which people say is probably what happened with Parasite last year. If that doesn't happen, then whatever has the least number of votes of number one votes, that gets scrapped, and then their number two votes gets counted. So it just keeps going. So it's really, in a lot of ways, a matter of like what gets the most number two or three votes in the Oscar that tends to win in the past.
So it is Chicago 7.
It's hard to say. I mean, like, there are people who Nomadland has a lot of love, but there's a question of, does it have a lot of hate? Are there people who feel like it doesn't have enough of a plot? Are there people who feel like it's too, arty? I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's really hard to say, but I think Chicago 7 does appeal to a lot of older voters and is a feel-good movie, is a historical movie, talks about, justice, and talks about speaking truth to power in a way that people might like, even though we're years, or not years, but it feels like years, but months after Trump no longer being the president, I don't know. There could be there's something to be said for that. It also won the SAG Ensemble Award, which says something about, the degree to which people think it's like a nice...
I actually love that award. Yeah, Chicago 7 winning, but I love the construction of that award.
Yeah,
sorry.
I agree.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, there's something to be said for that. There's also a case for Minari winning Best Picture, in that, that movie has a lot of love. It's a feel-good movie in the way that Best Pictures sometimes are. We didn't talk about her at all, but Yu Young Yu is going to win for Best Supporting Actress, which is, it's very rare for foreign language films, which it kind of sort of is, in the sense that most of the movie is in Korean. It's rare for, foreign language actors to get nominated, same with Asian actors. Like, that's one of the biggest blind spots of the Academy. So, like, the fact that there's so much love for the movie, the fact that it got nominated for screenplay with its, the sort of hurdles it had to overcome, there's a lot of love for that movie. And I could have seen that movie winning the SAG Ensemble Award. Arguably, I think it probably should have won over Trial of Chicago 7. So that's the kind of movie that totally could get a lot of number two.
Little Alan Kim capturing your heart the entire fucking movie.
There's also precedent for a small, little, quiet A24 film overcoming a front runner that has, won every other award, as we saw with Moonlight versus La La Land. So there's a possibility there, but I'm going to say that Nomadland is probably going to win. If it's going to be a slightly boring, albeit, in my opinion, just Oscar season, which happens every now and then. You don't have a lot of winners. Like, 1917 was the one that was supposed to win last year, and Parasite won the year before that. It was Roma that was supposed to win, and Green Book won. So, rules are meant to be broken.
It happens.
But I would say Nomadland is probably going to take it at the end of the day. So.
Yeah.
It's where we are. It's the state of the race.
John, you asked me to rank my.
Oh my God!
Yeah, best yeah. Pictures. Let's hit it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I don't think that Pat. I know you definitely did not see all of the Best Picture winners. So I just asked us to each rank all of the Best Picture winners that we saw. So maybe when you do your rankings, indicate which ones you didn't see, though, so we know that they're not being factored in.
Okay, so I'm going to. I'll start. I'll kick us off.
Please do.
I did not see The Father, so. Okay. That's in my 8 spot because I haven't seen it, which is fair. And I think that, like, the top...
Oh, and I should say, go. Let's go bottom to top.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I'll say, before I start, I think that the top 3 are very close in my...
Sure.
And also in my favorites of the past year.
Yeah.
They fall in that they're so close.
Yeah.
But number 8, The Father, obviously, because I have not seen it. Number 7, I have Mankey Mank, as Patrick Stanley would call it. Number 6 for me was Nomadland. Not a huge fan, but you know my reasons.
Mm-hmm.
5 was Trial of Chicago 7. 4, Promising Young Woman. 3, so 2 and 3 are very, 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 very close. 3, Sound of Metal. 2, Minari. And 1, Judas and the Black Messiah. Now, 1, 2, 3 are...
Yeah.
Millimeters... in closeness, and I've only had 24 hours to dwell in Minari, and that could easily overtake Judas and the Black Messiah, because it's such a beautiful and sad, humbling,
yeah,
feel good. It's there. Everything it hits
a lot of things.
It hits all the emotions.
Yeah,
and it was. Just like Parasite, in the sense of, like, it did, once you kind of got into it, it didn't feel like you were reading the entire time.
Yeah.
So that's my list.
No, yeah, that's it's not my list at all, but I respect it. It's a good ranking. Pat, you go next.
Well, I haven't seen The Father and I haven't seen Minari, so I didn't even rank them. So last on the list is Promising Young Woman.
That's wild because you got through 40 minutes of Trial of the Chicago 7.
I mean, Promising Young Woman, it just doesn't work for me on a gazillion different levels. 5 is Chicago 7. 4 is Nomadland. Wait, I'm so sorry. No, 4 is Judas and the Black Messiah. 3 is Nomadland. 2 is Mank. 1 is Sound of Metal. So, yeah.
Can I just say, I think, I just feel the need to say this on the podcast. I think Promising Young Woman, I think that you slightly got poisoned by the discourse.
No, I really don't think I did.
I feel like you were a little more warm on that movie when you first saw it.
I think I was warm on it because I was like, oh, we're thinking about this. And then I just really thought about it. And then I was like, you know, this is my one Promising Young Woman take.
Okay.
When I really thought about it, it is a better movie if she castrates each man. It is a more effective movie if she castrates them. I'm not saying that because I'm a grubby little gross. I'm saying that because the movie... Okay. She pulls way too many punches. So here's the thing with directing. You can pull punches and slip punches, but you also have to give some punches back.
Sure.
And that whole movie is sleight of hand tricks and cleverness that never really amounts to anything. And yeah. So I was kind of warm on it when I first saw it, but the more and more I thought about it, I was like, you know, Yes, I was exposed to some very, very, very strong opinions, both pro and anti.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and the movie has generated a lot of those. I guess I'm just saying that because I saw it last night. I watched it with Sarah, a friend of the pod. Check out her episode on Dave Matthews Band. And I actually was, I was warmer on it than I was expecting to be after watching it a second time, not in theaters, which is that was how I experienced the first time. So I don't know. Okay, I will take your word for it. I will trust you on this. I will trust you on this.
I loved Promising Young Woman. I loved it.
A lot of people did.
I didn't love it. I think I like a lot of what it does. I think that if it did lean into what Pat said that it should lean into, I think that arguably it would make for a more like immersive, interesting film experience. It would in no universe have gotten nominated for Best Picture if it had done that. And arguably that's not a good reason for movies to make the choices that they make, but it did make the choices that they made, and who the fuck are we? It got nominated for 5 million Oscars. And Emerald Fennell, we'd love to have you on the podcast. And Carrie Mulligan, we would definitely love to have you on the podcast, especially since Pat just recently found out that you're British. And have one of those funny voices.
You sound like you're from London.
Yeah. Oh boy. Like and subscribe, folks. Like and subscribe. Okay. Here's my rankings. Number 8, Trial of Chicago 7, the one movie that should not have been nominated in this hell or the next. Number 7, Minari. Number 6, Promising Young Woman. Number 5, The Father. And then from here, I say we're going into like the very, very good movies realm. Number 4, Judas and the Black Messiah. Number 3, Mank. Number 2, Nomadland. Number 1, I said it was my number one movie of 2020 on the Best of 2020 episode, and it remains so. Sound of Metal. So that's where we are. May the best man win.
We did it, Joe.
We did it,
Joe. It's not a competition, John.
It's not a competition.
Sure feels like it.
Yeah, it sure feels like it is. It will be when I do break my I'm never going to bet on anything vow and just bet the entire pony on Hustavis or Hustavik or whatever it is winning best song or something like that.
Put the house on Hustavik.
Yeah.
To win the whole thing.
Brendan, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, right. I have to plug myself. You have
to plug yourself.
Instagram at Brendan Bendorf. I am also on Twitter at Brendan Bendorf. And
oh, you changed your handle.
I changed the handle. I am no longer.
You went mainstream.
Yeah, you know, it used to be that, and I realized that, you know, I don't feel like hiding behind my backwards name just because of my job anymore. So therefore, I opened the floodgates and changed it to my name. So hopefully no colleagues or people that are present at my job will find that.
Right. Your customers.
My customers. As it were. Yes.
That's fair. And people can also listen to Filmaholics Identify wherever they find their podcast, which they should absolutely do. It's dormant at the moment.
It's taking a nap. We'll see what happens with it. But I did a number of episodes throughout 2020 where I actually talked to some people about, which we didn't mention on the podcast here, but there's a few episodes with people who worked on Concrete Cowboy, which recently has been on Netflix. So please
You also
check
interviewed
those out.
Someone who was like, who worked with M. Night Shyamalan, yeah?
Yes, M. Night Shyamalan's one of his creative team members. So there's some good content there, and please listen to it if you feel so inclined,
and rate and review it iTunes and Apple
and
Apple
all, and all the things. That's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. I think it's on Google too. I never got the confirmation of that.
You can find it. Just Google it and you'll find it. Yes. Yeah. Pat, you got anything?
Monday's a big day. We're rolling on the first Pat and John on their best behavior
promo
filmed entertainment. So keep your eyes out for that, guys. It's going to look really fucking sick.
Sorry, guys. I won't be in it. So
yeah, just
brace yourself for that disappointment. You will not be seeing my acting chops just yet.
You guys can try to guess who's in it. She called in on one of the episodes. Mm. That's all I'll say.
Yes.
None of you are going to get it, but...
You're not, but...
Try.
Yeah, do your best. And as ever, please be sure to rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. Like us on Pat and John on their best behavior on Instagram. And tune into the Oscars this Sunday. And get in touch with us and let us know how you did and whose advice you found to be the most profitable.
Terrible.
Or terrible. Yeah, maybe that's more interesting. Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot for joining us, Brendan. We really appreciate you as ever.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, guys.